Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Christopher, let's go. Glad that you're hanging out as we talk Super Bowl. Joe Ostrowski was on in the first hour of the show. Dan Pompey was on for a great conversation in the first hour of the show. And now we go into hour two, and we are talking about a lot. We are talking about the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 53 is coming up. And we've got the game for you here. And one of the guys that's going to lead you into coverage of the game is joining me right now. And it's Big Ant Heron, Anthony Heron. From our staff, he's going to be hosting from noon until 3, and then at 3 o'clock, Westwood One takes over, and you will get their full-fledged pregame show. What's up, sir? Wait, did we lose Anthony? Don't tell me we lost him. Anthony, you there? I don't think we connected with him. See? Technology. I mean, Christopher, you're looking at me and giving me a thumbs up, and I'm talking to Anthony, and he's not speaking. So what am I supposed to do? There he is. Anthony, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Things went a little bit quiet on my end for a little while, but I figured, you know, Mr. Dixon there, as I like to call him, I just figured he was working his magic. I tried not to panic.
All right, well, good. I'm glad that you didn't panic. I'm glad that you're also on the show. How are things?
Things are good, man. My schedule certainly lightens up a bit, you know, as the football season comes to a close. So it's nice. I haven't been to O'Hare in a couple of weeks. That's a welcome change for the wife and the son. They get to, you know, to a certain extent, it's a welcome change. They get to see me in town more frequently than normal. You know, I know the next time I go to O'Hare, it's weird when you travel as much as I tend to throughout the year, and then the TSA agents at O'Hare, they kind of get to, you know, become accustomed to seeing you. They get to know your face and your name and whatnot. And, you know, not from, you know, some of them from what I'm doing here in the city on TV and radio or whatever, but a lot of it is just because I'm there so damn much. And a lot of times if I go, you know, 2 weeks in a row without being there, next time I show up, like, hey, where you been, man? I haven't seen you in a while. How's your family? And where you traveling to this week? So I anticipate, you know, next time I fly, there'll be some of that at O'Hare, but that's not going to be for a bit, which is a good thing.
Well, I'm just glad that those guys are back to work.
Agreed.
And that the mechanism can move smoothly for all of us, and that those people can get
for
their paychecks.
Yes.
For the time being, we'll see what ends up happening in a couple of weeks. In a couple of days, there is a football game to be played.
True.
And I would love to know what you thought about the route that each team took to get to the Super Bowl. Let's start in the NFC with the Rams, because there looked like there was a point where it could have gone the other way for the Rams. And the Bears exposed some of their flaws, and I know some of it just had to do with them being really cold. But it wasn't the only reason why they lost that game. Jared Goff hadn't been playing well. So how did this team right itself and get to a point where they could win the NFC?
Well, for the Rams as a whole, you know, as you know, they were building off of what they did last year in Sean McVay's first season, and we focused a lot on what they've been able to accomplish offensively, with good reason, because of McVay and being the offensive genius, and you got the number one overall pick at quarterback, and the talent, the roster that they've put together, you know, a lot of that talent that's been kind of nurtured and developed. We see a lot of the names that were there as of last season were on that side of the ball. Then they spend the offseason accumulating all these new faces and all this additional talent, guys with huge resumes and potential Hall of Fame resumes on that side of the rock. And they bring a lot of them in, and it really wasn't coming together that well, you know, for them offensively throughout the bulk of the season. And specifically for Jared Goff, you know, he was in the MVP discussion for a lot of the season. And then just as things continued and moved forward, it's, you know, basically from the, like kind of that month of December on, we saw him come back down to earth and start to play, you know, a more ordinary level of football. And the thing that the Rams, that McVay is able to do for them offensively that they benefit from, is what makes them a difficult matchup. And I've been talking to folks about this as it relates to the game, is what you tend to see from a lot of NFL outfits, and that the Bears being one of them, where you have some versatility within the offense and how the game plan comes together on game day and what you're calling. You usually see teams rolling personnel in and out, on and off the field quite a bit. And that's not something the Rams really specialize in. The Rams, you know, they've switched up a little bit more during the playoffs, but for the most part, the Rams are a team that uses what's known as 11 personnel, you know, one running back, one tight end. And they go that nearly exclusively in a lot of the games they play. One of the things that does that makes it very difficult for the opposing defenses is because you can't utilize that, you know, when the defensive coaches are up in the box upstairs and they're looking down, seeing what personnel is being changed offensively coming on and off the field. Normally the defense will match that personnel, and it gives you a bit of an idea of what the opponent's going to run play-wise. And the Rams don't do that as much. Now, they may run some personnel on and off, but it's pretty much 11 personnel for the most. You may get a CJ Anderson, you know, coming in for a Todd Gurley or that sort of thing. But for the most part, they're going a lot of 11 personnel. They're going majority 11 personnel. So it's made the defensive matchups more difficult. It sets up a lot of the things they do with their play action. And even when Jared Goff's game was off late in the season, and even for, you know, stretches of their playoff games here, it still allows them the ability to set up shot plays because it's a difficult predetermination for the opposing defense. And so as their offense has leveled out a bit down the stretch of the season, and part of that to me, honestly, is also due to just the opposing defenses playing at a higher level. You know, we saw that Monday Night Football game between them and the Chiefs, and, you know, you and I even talked about it in the days after that, where folks are wondering, well, is defense now eliminated in the NFL? And it wasn't. You know, I think it just got to a point where, you know, like I spoke to the Rams radio play-by-play guy, J.B. Long, on the morning show that Jason Goff and I do for SiriusXM. And J.B. said that, you know, a guy like Ndamukong Suh is a good example of that, where he's a guy who could be on path towards a Hall of Fame career, but he's at a certain point in his career where he just kind of got through the regular season, and there's certain downs and distances where maybe he wasn't taking on that double team on third and two in the way that he is right now in the playoffs. And certainly with the level of, you know, the tenaciousness that he's penetrating into the backfield and becoming an enhanced pass rusher right now, what he's really missing on his resume, aside from Pro Bowls and stats and whatever else, is a championship. And we're seeing him take his game to another level now that the Rams are in the playoffs, and now that these things are on the line. And honestly, you know, talk about Jared Goff's play leveling off. Aaron Donald in the postseason has been closer to human as well. And Ndamukong Suh has really been, snap by snap, a more productive guy than Aaron Donald. That doesn't take anything away from Aaron Donald. He's about as ferocious as it gets. He's a shop wrecker like no other. But Ndamukong Suh has been the version of Ndamukong Suh that Rams fans have been hoping for throughout the entire season. He has been that throughout their playoff run. So the personnel is there defensively for the Rams to really give the Patriots some headaches.
How would you assess Jared Goff now, where he's at career-wise? Because I think there was a lot to be excited about over the last couple years, and you're sitting there going, oh, okay. But now I'm sitting here wondering, is he just a very solid system guy that fits perfectly with what McVay wants to do? And if you have a run game like Gurley, like if we put him on another team, would he be as effective?
Yes, with a good offensive coach. I think it just depends a bit. Like I view him right now, I'd say he's on a Matt Ryan sort of path right now. And Matt Ryan, when he's, you know, he's certainly had some big seasons in his career, some huge statistical years. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco came in the same year, whereas Joe Flacco wasn't nearly as prolific a passer early in his career as Matt Ryan was. But Matt Ryan was the one who was really putting up big numbers, but Flacco was the one who was winning games and advancing to playoffs and that sort of thing before Matt Ryan really got to that point as a winner. And Ryan has certainly had the more statistically significant career. And then he finally got to the point where he was making the playoffs and he won the league MVP and, of course, advanced to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago against the Patriots and nearly won it in the year that he won the league MVP. And we know what happened after they got up 28-3. That's the sort of path that I see Jared Goff on. Now, is Matt Ryan viewed as a guy who's going to be in the discussion of the Mount Rushmore of all-time quarterbacks? No. But is he a guy who season in, season out will have your team in position to win games, but there's a bit of that question mark with him? Yeah, sure. And I think part of that is because of the way that we judge quarterbacks, the level of play that we see Tom Brady. It's almost like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning had an effect on the way quarterbacks are viewed, similar to how Nick Saban had an effect on the way that college coaches were viewed, or Bill Belichick has had on the way NFL coaches are viewed, where, we see this start to Jared Goff's career, 2 Pro Bowls, been in the MVP discussion for a lot of his third year in the league, second year in the offensive system. And, I mean, that's a really impressive start to a career. That's a better start than Hall of Famers have had to their career in a lot of cases. I just think there's, we see some of these meteoric quarterbacks that, perhaps have done a little more in either the same amount of time or in less time than what Jared Goff has. But from a win-loss standpoint, I mean, especially the last 2 seasons, I don't think we can argue with where he's at with that. If he had a different coach than Sean McVay, would he be this good? Maybe not, because Sean McVay has proven now in a short time that he's one of the elite offensive minds in the NFL. But, yeah, I do certainly think there's a lot of offensive systems and offensive coaches who could succeed with Jared Goff. There's a reason he was the number one overall pick in the draft. He's living up to that, I would say.
Anthony Heron joining me. He will be on The Score from noon until 3, until we go to the national pregame coverage of Super Bowl 53. You spoke on McVay being special. What is it about what he does that's special?
Well, he's got a knack for it. It's this odd blend, a rare blend, and it's a blend that I think we kind of got to look a glimpse at Matt Nagy having a bit of this, where you see these guys who think the game at a really high level, like Bears offensive coordinator Mark Helfrich. One of the things that I observed about him at the college level was that he's a really good offensive mind, but for Mark Helfrich as a head coach, I didn't necessarily think that he always managed the people, his units as well on the interpersonal sort of level and the in-game management side of things, and just sort of, throwing the numbers and the stats out the window a bit and just kind of making a gut call in certain moments, as opposed to saying, well, you know what, we tend to go for 2 here, so we're going to go for 2 here. And, in a way, I felt like there were times while he was the coach at Oregon where he'd sort of ignore just, we don't necessarily have the confidence or the momentum, to use that term, in a moment like now, where let's just kick the extra point and keep it moving, where we don't allow ourselves to miss on the opportunity to put extra points on the board, things like that. But a Sean McVay at a very young age, I see him having that. He's got, the microprocessor as a brain, but he also has, the interpersonal human element to him. And I think Matt Nagy seems to have a lot of that as well. There's a comfort within his own skin that, as a really young guy, if he wins on Sunday, he's going to be the youngest coach to win a Super Bowl. He's got the youngest quarterback to ever start a Super Bowl going against the oldest quarterback to ever start a Super Bowl. And the coach who's coached between his head coaching and an assistant, and Bill Belichick, is nearly a quarter of the Super Bowls in history. Bill Belichick has been on the sideline in some capacity coaching in him. So you've got that youth versus that experience. But for McVay, I think that combination, what he does schematically and game plan wise, like I was talking about with the Rams offense earlier, that's rare and that's unique. But to be able to have, what we've seen him have some fun with in post-game interviews and, and talking to some of the guys around him a lot, a truly photographic sort of memory and the ability to be creative. He's got the left and right brain working at a supremely high level. And that was plucked out. That was recognized within him at a very early stage in his football career, and it's why he's become a head coach so quickly. The problem is now that we see that Sean McVay coaching tree, I'll use the term coaching tree for a guy who's in his second year as a head coach, but for him, now that he's got all these other assistants getting looks and getting opportunities and guys who've been around him and had lunch with him and this and that, and folks looking at them to be head coaches too, not everyone has that rare blend. Not all these other young offensive guys, just because they know the spread or they can call RPOs, not everyone's going to combine that in the McVay fashion. And that's what makes him special as a coach, as a football mind, and as a leader. He can combine those elements at a very high level.
I love watching Tom Brady. I've always joked that in my Bond villain scenario, if I need a quarterback to win a game to save my life, my choice is always going to be Tom Brady. I'm also really, I really enjoy watching how the Patriots defense and the Patriots offensive line have played a significant role in getting New England here. Obviously, Brady is special. What have those other two units been able to do to allow the Patriots to find themselves back in the Super Bowl?
Well, the career arc of Tom Brady, and if I'm correct, I think it's going to be 17 years to the day since the last time the Rams and the Patriots met in a Super Bowl is going to be this Sunday. And so it's, you know, that full circle element of it is going to be pretty cool. And then I think the way that the Patriots are operating offensively at this point has come full circle in that same manner, because we think back to that 0-2 Super Bowl, Tom Brady was 16 out of 27 in that game. And the run pass split from a play calling standpoint by Charlie Weiss was nearly 50-50. And that's what the Patriots offense has essentially become again. Now, because the NFL has evolved so much over the last couple of decades, we're certainly going to see more overall plays being run. So Tom Brady's going to attempt more than 27 passes. Well, let's say he's going to attempt 40-ish passes, 40-something passes. There's very likely to be 40-something runs or more in the game as well. They lean on the run. They lead with the ground attack. They put fullbacks in the lineup. They bring Gronk on the field, and Gronk is just as effective as a blocker at this point as he is as a pass receiver, and he's still a very above-average pass receiver at this point in his career, despite all the injuries and everything. So for Tom Brady, for him now at this advanced age, you know, Nickell Robey-Coleman, he's, you know, got a little bit of trouble. It's the biggest controversy of the week was him basically just saying what everybody knows, that, yeah, at 41, Tom Brady, his skills are a bit eroded from where they were. Dude's still a great quarterback. And that's part of why we've seen New England enhance the run game and draft Sony Michel in the first round and be able to utilize him in that way. And the Patriots offensive line, they've given up the least sacks in the NFL, especially when you include the regular season and the postseason. Part of that is because the offensive line has been spectacular, and certainly part of that is because Tom Brady gets the ball out of his hands more quickly than any other quarterback in the league. And we've seen so many different versions of the Patriots offense throughout Tom Brady's career. You know, we sort of generalize the term system as far as what Tom Brady has been in because Bill Belichick's been his head coach. But it's not like the 49ers with the West Coast offense, where for Joe Montana's entire career, they were running slant routes with Jerry Rice and John Taylor, and the ball was coming out in rhythm and on time and anticipation in a manner that most of the other, you know, offenses in the NFL weren't using yet until that Bill Walsh coaching tree started to spread out a bit there. A guy like Joe Montana, he was truly in the same system throughout his career. That hadn't necessarily been the case with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's had the same head coach. Bill Belichick has been the dude for him, you know, with the big whistle. But early in the career, like I referenced, he was the pseudo game manager type who would just, he had that knack for making plays late that would lead to like that game winning Vinatieri kind of field goal. Then it evolved a bit. Then it was, okay, we can depend on him to throw the ball with more frequency early in the game and perhaps put up bigger passing numbers, but still in a more controlled manner. Then it developed into, okay, let's get the all-star lineup together here. Let's bring Randy Moss out here. Let's have him working with Wes Welker. Let's have some great tight ends on the field. Let's let Tom throw the ball deep. Let's go seven-step drop, and he's got all day to throw it. But whoops, we get to the Super Bowl, and we're going seven-step drop, and we can't protect him against this Giants pass rush. And then as his career's advanced, now it's starting to go back. Well, we've seen the controlled passing game with utilizing those two tight end sets, utilizing all these slot receivers, and now that's continued to develop more and more as he's aged and now gotten into his 40s. Now more back to what he was early in his career, where there was more of a run focus to the play calling, and Tom Brady's controlled passing and quick passing game decision-making and accuracy still sets them up for late in the game when this defense and the Patriots defense has been one of the best scoring defenses in the NFL over the last 2 months. This is now a defense that they can count on to have them in the game late because of the way they run the ball throughout the game and because Tom Brady's not going to do anything dumb with the ball. So we have seen so many different versions of Tom Brady. While Bill Belichick has been the consistency as the head coach, the system they've run offensively has been revamped over and over again to a number of different versions. And I think it's an underappreciated part of what's made Tom Brady's career so great. Him as a passer at his peak is certainly not the greatest passer we've seen in the NFL, but the career arc of Tom Brady is like no quarterback that's ever played the game.
It is. He's fun to watch, man, and I'm looking forward to watching him again, and I'm looking forward to seeing how McVay tries to stop him. And we were discussing, Joe and I were talking about how the best way to do it is with what they have up the middle, and that you can try to get him off his launch point as much as you can with Tom Brady and make him climb the pocket, make him uncomfortable when he climbs the pocket. And this might be the defensive line that is able to do that consistently enough that it makes him not be as effective of a passer as we expect him to be. I'm also thinking that this is the that when it comes to Belichick, we often default to, well, the other coach on the sideline is at a real disadvantage. And I feel like this is one of those times, and we obviously saw it last year, where you get to go, no, McVay might be able to match wits with Bill Belichick, and you don't feel like it's that big of an advantage for him.
It's going to be one of the fun things to watch play out. You look at the offenses, you look at Wade Phillips on the defensive side of things with how he's able to operate that Rams defense and the personnel we mentioned being there. And Aqib Talib being back healthy, it's a secondary for the Rams. We saw Marcus Peters, when Talib was out, get taken advantage of because he had to be the lead corner. And he had to, in a lot of situations, try to take away that number one receiver with Talib healthy. Statistically, this secondary is graded out at a much higher level, and they've given up far less big plays, explosive plays in the passing game when Aqib Talib has been in there. And of course, he's back, he's healthy, and it's been a big boost for the way the secondary's played. And it was like that throughout the season. Early in the year, DBs were fine. Then the middle of the year, Talib was out, struggled. Marcus Peters got taken advantage of, and Marcus Peters is maybe the most talented cover corner in the NFL. He's just a head case. If he can play within himself, and I talked about this a bit going into the NFC Championship game, if he can just play within himself and play technically sound and not get into, you know, some of the one-on-one machismo sort of things because it's the big stage and because it's the Super Bowl, if he can just kind of do his job and not get antsy and force Tom Brady, which he's going to be willing to do, but to drive the long field and sort of that death by a thousand cuts. I was talking about it on Pro Football Weekly earlier today. I was on there with Hub and Hemp and the guys over at NBC Sports Chicago. And if he can force Tom Brady to have to be patient with the ball and not get too antsy, because Brady's going to find Marcus Peters. He's going to look for the guy he can attack that's out of position or that's not trusting his technique. But he's just got to continue to operate within himself, because there's going to be quickness to the way the ball comes out. And if Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, if they can try to, if they can apply pressure within the interior in a way that Tom Brady hasn't had to face much this season because his offensive line has been so phenomenal, then it'll be a different look than what New England's had to deal with throughout the bulk of the season and certainly throughout this playoff run. And this is one of the better offensive lines Tom Brady has had. A lot of times it's scheme over a lot of other things from a personnel standpoint, aside from that run where Randy Moss was there and they really had to pass protect for a while. Now we see a group that's run blocking at a really high level, and it's positively affecting the way they're able to pass protect because the run has now set them up to take some of the teeth out of the interior of the opponent's defense. So they're going to be in good position to protect well. To me, you know, I feel like if Sony Michel has a huge day, then it's going to be really hard sledding for the Rams to try and come out with the win, because if you've got the run game really rolling for New England, then there's no reason to think Tom Brady's going to do anything silly with the ball.
Anthony, as always, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for jumping on the show. I really enjoyed the Super Bowl conversation. I'm looking forward to listening to you Sunday afternoon from noon to three right here on The Score.
Yes, sir. Be on there with Mark Grote. Looking forward to it.
Oh,
preview.
You're going to have such a good time.
Yeah,
with Grotes.
And
I would suggest checking out his episode of House of L with me.
Oh, yeah, really? Okay.
Yeah,
he's
this week. Yeah. So I would highly recommend you check it out.
Did he do any impersonations?
He did a Lou Piniella impersonation that had me in tears.
Excellent. Love it. I'm definitely going to check it out.
Thank you, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you.
That's Big Ant Heron. That's where you should be following him on Twitter. He is one of our football experts, and he's terrific. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll switch the backdrop just a little bit. I had a conversation last night with Vincent Goodwill about power structure in the NBA versus the NFL. It was great. I'll share it with you next here on The Score.
Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
So who's the spoon man in this scenario? Why are we playing spoon man?
Inside joke about Twitter.
All right, that doesn't really help me or the audience. But
Virginia governor, when in his youth he had a nickname that rhymed with spoon. With spoon, and the man was still there. And he's a white cat, and the word is not very good to black people.
Oh. Okay,
And Herb's been singing it all night, sitting here next to me.
So you've been singing the wrong word. Is
yes.
What?
Oh, when I saw his nickname, I was like, "That's my favorite Soundgarden song."
Okay, that's problematic that that's your favorite Soundgarden song, but I mean, there's problematic all the way.
Yeah.
But probably the most troubling thing to me is that Spoon Man is your favorite Soundgarden song.
Why not?
I mean, come on.
Fell on Black Days. What am I supposed to look at? Black Hole Sun.
I mean, why not?
And also, when I was a kid, I thought that was Black Sun. Like Black Hooker's son.
You also thought that Humpty Hump and Shock G were the same person?
Yes, for a long time.
Until you were an adult?
Yes, until I was like 20 at ICB.
Christopher, did you know that about Herb?
No idea.
That he thought that Shock G and Humpty Hump from Digital Underground were the same person.
Have you seen them in the same
room?
No,
I thought they were different people.
Sorry, they were different people, not the same person.
For a long time.
For a long time.
I forgot who told me. It might have been Rich Wyatt, when we were at the ICB together. But it's like, no, they're two different people.
What's crazy about that is that it lends credence to why no one seemed to understand that, you know, Clark Kent was Superman. Like, oh, he put these glasses on.
Same thing with She's All That. Ugh, Lady Bugs. Ugh. Lady Bugs, no glasses.
Right, nice. She's not wearing. And they make. What movie is that? Where not another teen movie where they make fun of it? I believe it's Kyler Lee who plays on Superman or Supergirl now, and she's great on that as Agent Danvers. But yeah, it's like, oh, she took her glasses off. I mean, come on, now she's hot. Because she's not wearing glasses.
I want everybody to watch that movie, especially the part where Paul Walker's character tells Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character is like Lainey Boggs. He's like, no, dude, no, anybody but her.
Right. It's really ridiculous in those movies. You know, I saw they were running a couple of like good movies that I never really like that you sit down and you don't watch them all the way through, but you watch pieces of them. Scary Movie was on. So great.
It's one of those ones after you've seen it like a first or second time, you're like, when you catch it, you're like, I'll sit for around for like 15 minutes
yeah.
and watch this.
And then you're like, oh, I've now watched an hour of this movie.
It's the only thing that Chris Elliott's ever done that's good.
You know what?
Ask Herb.
Well, we can. Maybe we'll bring it back next week. I was watching There's Something About Mary. A few weeks ago, through a 2019 lens, man, that's a rough movie to watch.
There are quite a few movies that you like when they first came out, you're like, this is great, that don't hold up the test of time.
Like, I don't mean that the performances are bad.
No,
the
I'm just saying.
Performances are great. But from a social aspect.
Messages and everything within them. Yeah. They don't hold up. There's some things that just don't hold up.
That at one point we leave Mary in a room with the guy that she has a restraining order against. And I get it. It's supposed to be a dark comedy. But wow, like, it was cringeworthy watching that again. Cameron Diaz, though, always willing to play. Like, in every, like, fun. Like, she's always fun. Even in Bad Teacher. Fun. Like, having fun with it. Ugh. Okay. So, I had a conversation with Vincent Goodwill. Initially, we were talking about the trade of Kristaps Porzingis. And, I mean, we had a long conversation about the Bulls, too. But I thought the most interesting thing that came out of the conversation with Vincent was us talking about power dynamics. How the NBA, the players have the power, and in the NFL, players really have none. So I asked him about LeBron kind of consolidating all of this power. And it led to a really cool conversation. Take a listen.
For whatever reason, the NBA is that league where the labor force gets treated by the public en masse as if they are the employers. Normally, people side with employees over employers, correct?
Correct.
For whatever reason, in the NBA, and I'm sure me and you can sort of, if we dug a little bit, we could probably figure out why. For whatever reason in the NBA, people don't like the employees taking, you know, full advantage of whatever mechanism is available to them. LeBron James is the singular most important figure in sports free agency, not named Kurt Blood.
Wow.
If you think about it,
wow.
So player empowerment, where you're talking, because everything else before 2010 was whoever offers you the most money wins. LeBron says, that's cool. I'm going to get my money my way, but I'm also going to pick where I want to go. I'm going to buck this system and all these mechanisms that you put in place to keep people like me where I am. And I'm also going to basically put myself in the best possible position to win because the public en masse has put pressure on me, the star player, to win when I do not have control over plenty of other external factors. So I might as well stack the deck and control what I can control, because at the end of June, if I'm not holding the trophy, I'm getting killed for 3 months.
Is there any lesson here for other players in the NBA and other organizations? Can anyone else follow the LeBron model, or is it special to him because he is special?
It's special to him because he is special, but he's also empowered people around him. He's empowered Maverick Carter. He's empowered Rich Paul. But not just that, because plenty of people have empowered people around him, and it hasn't always gone well, right? But these guys are educated, they're savvy, they understand the ins and outs. They're not just someone's boys, they're qualified, right? How many times have we seen someone try to play the part, but they don't understand the inner workings of a situation and wind up biting the player and themselves in the butt? So the fact that LeBron has chosen, quote-unquote, his friends, but also made them equal partners in the world in which they inhabit, where they individually are going to be respected, that's the lesson that players, I think, are going to learn. Not that there's a Rich Paul or a Maverick Carter around, you know, every corner. But basically, here are the rules. If you're going to bring people alongside you, you know, here's the guardrails. Here's what you need to do. Maverick Carter, you know, was working with Nike under Lynn Merritt for several, you know, for years, you know, after he left Western Michigan from playing basketball, because he knew he was running LeBron Inc. Rich Paul was working under Mark Termini, was working with CAA. If these are the things that you want to do, if you want to have a team and people around you, then you need to make sure that they're qualified and they're able to handle your business as opposed to just passing people on as credible figures.
Talking with Vincent Goodwill, who is the senior NBA writer for Yahoo. You can follow him on Twitter at Vince Goodwill. The reason that I asked you that question about LeBron is you know what happens every offseason in the NBA. Guys get huge money deals that are fully guaranteed. And the guys in the NFL go, oh, hell no. Like, what's going on? I'm putting my body on the line. But for some reason, they're not able, whether it's the Basketball Players Association or even Baseball's Players Association, which I think is very strong as a unit, maybe not as strong individually as what LeBron can muster up in the NBA. I wonder if the NFL guys can take anything from the way LeBron has gamed the system and find some power in it?
Well, here's the thing. Unless it's a, you know, a black quarterback, basically, because that's the position of power in the NFL, is the quarterback position, is the position of leadership, basically. It's almost a position of management, if you think about it. You don't think of Drew Brees as a center one. You think of Drew Brees and Sean Payton. You think of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. You know what I'm saying? You think of the star quarterback being conjoined with the head coach, and the head coach is in the NFL management, whereas in the NBA, he's more of a partner. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where, you know, things get tricky. The problem with the NFL is there's just too many players to get on the same side with that. So there's not going to be a certain amount of play, the certain amount of players who have a certain amount of weight, you know, that are going to get on the same page. It's just, I just say the structure of it is completely different. As to the fact that the career lifespans are shorter, these guys aren't going to strike, you know, for the benefit of the upper crust the way that the NBA went from having basically the middle class be the privileged class on the backs of the superstars. Now it's the superstars that are basically getting the supermaxes and all these other type of deals, where before the middle classes were getting overpaid. That sort of thing flipped. In the NFL, the structure is just so different because of so many players, Lawrence, and it's hard to get those guys on the same page, different agendas. And the guaranteed contract thing, that's something that they got to go to the wall for. You got to be willing to lose a season for something like that. And I don't think players as a whole, NFL players who don't have guaranteed contracts, who know your career lifespan is what, 3.5 years maybe? You know what I'm saying? Like, you have a very limited time to maximize your earnings potential on top of the damage that it's doing to your body. I don't know if the system is set up for that. These guys couldn't even rally around for Colin Kaepernick, who clearly deserved to be in the NFL, and a lot of guys didn't want to step up and say, you know what, this is wrong. So imagine how hard it's going to be for them to stand up for themselves and go to the wall for guaranteed contracts, you know what I'm saying, when it really, really matters. I don't know if I see that happening.
It's great conversation with Vincent, and I think at some point there will be colleges that will study the way that LeBron James kind of built the business side of LeBron James. Like, the player side, it's not easy. I mean, what he's doing is remarkable, and the argument could be made that he's the greatest player that ever lived. But on the business side of it and the power consolidation side of it, it's amazing. Like, I'll give you an example. LeBron has succeeded in doing what Derrick Rose failed to do, where it's people around him, it's his brother, it's other folks that are involved in Derrick, in the business aspect of Derrick, in the commodity that was Derrick Rose, and monetizing it. I'm not saying that they didn't get paid. Like, all those guys got paid. Derrick made hundreds of millions of dollars from Adidas, like all that sort of stuff. But I'm saying that what LeBron has allowed the guys in his circle to do is build a business, their own business. Now, he still wields power over that business, over those businesses, because of the commodity that he is. But he's now taken that from, instead of just being the player and worrying about getting money as a player and getting power from just playing, LeBron has been able to turn that into him becoming a mogul. It's pretty impressive stuff that he could leverage. Well, everyone wants me to come to their team, and look at what I do for teams when I show up there. You become an instant championship contender. Not the Lakers this year, though. Although maybe, but you're already starting to see the things like that happens to old guys. Like, you get groin pulls. That's what happens when you get older. That's why it's like, well, his skills haven't diminished. No. LeBron's skills are probably not going to diminish until he's in his like mid to late 40s. But what happens is availability. But the fact that he has built up, I don't think it's called LeBron Co., but for purposes of this argument, LeBron Co. into this where Rich Paul now has an agency that people think are acquiescing to the will of LeBron James and allowing them to play kingmaker around the NBA. It's incredible. So I'm glad Vincent shed some light on it. And he's right about the NFL and the NFL players. And I hate to see what happens to the NFL players. But the quick turnover, like Vincent was saying, doesn't allow for a cohesion in their players' association to really push back against ownership. And in cases of going up against ownership in labor disputes, these men who are fearless on the field cower very easily as a group, and they lose every time to the owners. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Stuck at home this week? Need to get out the house? And what a great way to get out of the house. You know, you can go watch the Wolves. It's going to be like 50 degrees this weekend. I saw people wear open jackets today and no hats on. Like it was the fall. And you know Monday, folks are going to be out in shorts and slides. Ridiculous. But go out and go see the Wolves. Catch the Wolves Saturday as they battle rival Manitoba and celebrate the 25th anniversary with free parking courtesy of Kia. ChicagoWolves.com. Back after this on The Score. This 224 texter says, only white people will be wearing shorts this weekend. You ain't gonna catch a brother in cargo shorts and flip-flops. Okay. You've apparently never been to the south end of the lakefront.
Herb and I literally were just talking about this right here. We're like, yeah, no, it's shorts weather. Like, today felt like summer walking outside.
Well, I mean, let's be real. We are talking about like 60 degree difference. So I understand it. Like, it feels good initially.
It will literally feel like 75 degrees on Sunday.
Sunday and Monday.
Like that change will be so great.
Like, I get it. I just thought it was really weird that I saw people with open coats like, it's still only 19 degrees. Like, it's regular cold now.
See, that's the thing. Like, today was dangerous. I didn't wear gloves because I felt so great initially. And then, like, 10 minutes in, I was like, man, my hands are frozen. That's the danger of going from this sub-freezing temperatures and then going to 20. And you're like, oh, man, we're good. We passed it.
Yep. It was fun. It was really fun.
Nah, I might not have shorts on because the lotion situation hasn't been going on since like October.
Oh, so you got your ashy?
Oh, man. It's terrible.
Well, I'm just, what's nice is like just watching the melting happen. I'm really proud of my house. I know it's a dumb thing to say, but my house handled things really well this week. And I was like, man, I made a really good investment in a solid house that didn't have any leaks. Like, the house was warm enough. Like, I didn't go crazy, like, turning up the furnace. Like, I dealt with it, you know? Like, you put on a hoodie inside, maybe, and you deal. But everything, like was okay. And I was prepared for disasters, especially with, like, Mel being out of town. Like, I was sitting there going, well, of course, when there's not another pair of hands here, this is when everything's going to break bad. And it didn't. But I am very much looking forward to the melting of the snow, the washing away. I already saw someone pick up their Dibs chairs this week on my block. So that's encouraging. Because I think that whole thing is crazy, but
you haven't seen, I mean, this weekend is a really danger for this melting snow and then the oncoming rain for flooding.
Yeah, it is. It is. And for falling ice. Like, walking around downtown could be pretty hazardous. And there was that poor woman who died a few years ago walking down Michigan Avenue by that church, and something hit her. And I'm conscious of it as I go to the garage, because I'm like, okay, I'm trying to like knock all the ice stalactites off, because stalactites go down, stalagmites go up, right? Yes! You know who knew that? I don't know anyone who's a geologist. There's probably a couple people. I mean, I know they're not actual stalagmites and stalactites, but if you understand it, you get the imagery. So I'm trying to knock all that stuff down so I don't open up the garage door and then, you know, big brick of ice falls on my head.
You know, I never understood. I see it all the time walking down here. I understand there's a danger to it, but it always says look for falling ice.
Don't look.
Yeah, I was like, what can I do about that? Like, if I look and I see it,
oh, I'm dead.
I'm done. Yeah. The same thing when I was driving to San Diego, I would see these signs that say, look out for rams. I was like.
Like Jared Goff?
Yeah. I was like, what can I do? If a ram runs in the street, I'm up. I'm done. Or the look out for deer. I'm like, this is dumb. Look for falling rocks. No. Let me just drive through Pennsylvania. Your state is terrible to drive through.
Pennsylvania is awful? I didn't know that.
Ugh, it's like 8 hours of boring, and then it becomes really exciting because you're going down hills and watching for falling rocks.
Not as bad as Oklahoma, though. Oklahoma's pretty bad.
Not as bad as Illinois.
Illinois is bland.
Going north to south in this state down 57 is awful. Because you're like, wait, I see the big old cross. I'm in Effingham. How much longer am I going to be in this state? Oh, another 3 hours?
I think Illinois is the second flattest land in the United States to Mississippi.
It's very boring. It's a very boring drive to get to Cairo. And then when you get to Cairo, you got all sorts of other issues. Because, you know, I was trying to explain the Cairo thing, and then explain the, you know, the unfortunate mascot naming. People didn't get it. I'm like, I said, how about this? They're called the Dragons now. Oh, that's Pekin. I'm sorry. Sorry, Pekin. Because, you know, your sister city, Peking. And Cairo's just the, you know, you stop off there and you're like, oh, I am in Kentucky. I'm totally in Kentucky right now. Which is pretty much south of I-80, if we're being real, real. Right? 815 knows what I'm talking about. Charles Davis joins me next to break down the Super Bowl here on The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.